Coming up on Upper Skagit Talks is an interview I had with Rachel Stackow, who heads up the farm-to-school program at the Concrete Elementary School. After talking with her and her AmeriCorps assistant, Alan, the children came in for a session or a class, and so this interview will be a two-parter. I am hoping to have it downloaded to KSVU Facebook page so that if the children who were in the class want to listen to it because they're in school when it plays, they can go click on a link. I will ask Bill to make a link on our KSVU Facebook page. This interview was done on Thursday, March the 15th, so the children will know which class they were. It really is a wonderful program, and Rachel has done a wonderful job of keeping it going, keeping it active and alive and interesting. Marla at the school has done a great job in assisting, and so has Mia Rusin. So we have a lot of wonderful people in our school district who are very willing to spend extra time to make sure that the children have a good foundation up here. So anything I can do to promote it, I will. And I think anybody listening who have children in the school district should probably help promote it too, as well as they can, maybe by being a volunteer if at all possible. And you know, you can volunteer in the summertime on the weekends to come and water those plants so that Rachel might have a weekend free. So please stay tuned, listen in, and enjoy. The second part will be at the beginning of the actual lesson that they have in the kitchen, where they talk about what they are going to cook and a little bit of history that comes into the food. And then I tried to go around and talk to each child individually. And it gets a little bit noisy, but it's still quite interesting. So please stay tuned and enjoy. And thank you for listening. This is Irma Bode, KSVU 90.1 FM on your radio dial, Upper Skagit Talks. And today I get to talk to Rachel Stackow, who is the lead for the Farm to School program. And I'm going to give you just a little bit of history, because when I came over here to the bungalow this morning, Alan was here, and he's from AmeriCorps, and he is helping out. So that got us to talking about AmeriCorps. So Rachel, didn't you start with AmeriCorps?
Yes, Irma. So I was the 2014-2015 AmeriCorps VISTA through United General District 304. And my project was getting Farm to School kind of launched and visible in the district. And so Alan is our fourth year AmeriCorps, which is very exciting for us. And just really a testimony to the strength of that program and what it can do in a community. I think it's fair to, for those who don't know what AmeriCorps is, it's kind of a home front version of the Peace Corps. So where the Peace Corps goes overseas and serves in a country for a couple of years, AmeriCorps members serve in a community inside the United States for a term of a year.
And how do you sign up for it?
You know what? I just Googled jobs. I was looking for a job, and actually Mike Brondi found this posting and told me that I should apply for it. But there's an AmeriCorps website. I think it's AmeriCorps.gov, and they have all of the current postings around the states.
So you started at AmeriCorps as just, that's a volunteer spot though, isn't it?
You get a living stipend every month, but yes.
But it's not really a job. Now, did United General hire you from AmeriCorps?
Yes.
That's the history that I like to hear about. So doing a good job with and for AmeriCorps can lead to other things.
Yeah, it has for me. I think most of the four AmeriCorps that we've had all have gone on to great things. And for people who are coming right out of university at this time in our world, it can be really hard to get a job. Correct. You know, even entry-level jobs are hard to come by in your field. And so for me, AmeriCorps Vista was an amazing way to get a ton of experience and then be employable at the end of that year.
As AmeriCorps, were you able to pick the area or the kind of work that you wanted?
This is the only position that I applied for, was here in Concrete, and I knew that I wanted to work in this region and with food, so it was the perfect fit for me. But you can apply to, they have every kind of job imaginable, mostly paired with nonprofits.
Right. Okay, so you picked this area because you like the area, and I know that you'll even work on your days off out here. I've seen you do it. And besides that, you wanted to work with food. So once you were hired on by United General, did you have to write grants for Farm to School?
Yes. So I was writing grants for Farm to School as an AmeriCorps, and then those grants are what actually funded the position that I was hired for. And I still write grants. We are always seeking funding. We've been funded by the USDA Farm to School program, General Mills Foundation through Cascadian Farm is a major partner, and then many other smaller grants.
Was Farm to School already in existence before you wrote your first grant, or did you invent the name or the program?
No, I can't claim credit for that. And in fact, Farm to School was here in Concrete before I was hired. We had a team from United General in the school district had written a Farm to School planning grant and had done about 10 months of planning before I was hired. But the program is national, and it was a grassroots movement that kind of happened nationally. And now it's organized, and there's a national Farm to School network, and the USDA has a Farm to School grant program. And so it's become very large.
And besides food, like you have the bins out here for the children growing their own vegetables and fruits or whatever, they have summer camp. Isn't that part of Farm to School?
So summer camp became part of Farm to School when I became the coordinator of both programs, and I don't divide very clearly personally. But summer camp has been in Concrete. We're going into our sixth summer this year in 2018. So it started before Farm to School did, and seeks to really address the needs of the summer food gap that is experienced by children who are reliant on school meals, summer learning loss, which is experienced by kids who don't receive that kind of educational enrichment over the summer, and getting kids outdoors with the National Park Service. And then all tied into that is pro-social development and spending time with friends.
And it ties back into Farm to School because part of the program of the camp is to grow their own things.
Yeah, well, I can't turn that off in the summer just because I put on my camp hat. And obviously our garden is at its best when the summer campers are out here. So they get to benefit from things that kids planted during the school year. They get to harvest, and we do cooking and all of that too.
So they are learning how to grow things from scratch. They are learning now how to cook things, because you, with another grant, have acquired a kitchen.
Well, so this kitchen wasn't even grant funded. That's what's real exciting about it. We got a small grant from the Northwest Farm Credit Services for about $2,000, which is what kind of kicked us off. But then our last year AmeriCorps, Adele Esslinger, coordinated a benefit dinner for Farm to School, and we raised about $16,000 in one event, and all of that money went back into this classroom. And in addition to that, lots of the labor was donated. Tons of community volunteers have, you know, put their handiwork into this space. And then a lot of our materials were donated or given to us at cost by various local businesses or,
But you worked hard in getting those people to make those donations, right?
Yes. I mean, it was definitely a group effort. I have to give Adele another shout out because she worked tirelessly on this space and making sure that it was a really beautiful, welcoming space where kids feel at home and that it's theirs to do with.
So now we have a kitchen.
We do.
And what do you do with the kitchen?
We cook, which is, I mean, what you should do with a kitchen. And some of the times we're able to use produce out of the garden in what we make. Obviously, we're kind of at the end of that now and looking towards another growing season. But we are integrating science standards and social studies standards with cooking so that kids are learning that academic content and then learning independence and how to make healthy food.
So is it sort of like a home ec program?
people?
I think it might be a little bit like home ec, but we make things that the kids can make at home. I think that that's our healthy, incorporating local produce, things that they can prepare.
But talking to them at the same time on the benefits of what they are cooking.
Yes, and connecting it back to academic content.
Do they actually get near the stove or cutting up vegetables?
Yes, we hand kids knives. They go through a kitchen orientation and a knife talk, and they all sign a safety contract with myself or one of our other instructors also signing that so that we have an agreement about how we're going to keep each other safe in this space. But yeah, they use real tools.
Do you have other volunteers that work with you in the kitchen here other than you and Alan?
Yes, many community volunteers. I like to have three adults with every classroom. And so myself, usually Alan, and then an additional community volunteer besides the classroom teacher.
Are you having a problem getting volunteers?
You know, people have come out of the woodwork for us on this one, but there's always room for more help.
Okay, great. So you have more of a one-on-one when you're talking about handing a child a knife or standing by the stove. You really are a one-on-one. It's not turning them loose.
You know, it depends on the age of the child and kind of how we have a feeling for the class.
But talking about age, right. What grades do you cover?
We've had first graders out here.
Oh, my.
And then all the way up through sixth grade regularly. And then we're also reaching out to the seventh and eighth graders.
Okay, are they receptive?
Yes, everybody is very receptive.
Do they eat what they cook?
Most of the time, yeah.
And do they come back with stories of I took it home and did it and what happened?
Yeah, I heard today a young kid in my first class told me that he and his family made the sauteed greens recipe that we had our first week. And that's kale and chard and collards. And these kids are eating that like it's candy because they made it.
And because you do not have that growing out in front at this time, where do you get this food?
Well, when we did that recipe, it was growing out there, and we've eaten it all.
Okay.
But I shop around. Some of it gets donated by local farmers, and the Cedro Willy Food Bank has actually helped me get some local farm produce when they have it come in. And then I spend a lot of time at Cash and Carry buying big quantities of things. Because with five classes coming out a week, each class is divided into three groups that make the recipe individually. So there's 15 batches of everything being made a week, which this week we're using 5 dozen eggs for fried rice.
Oh,
so
wow.
That kind of quantity, you just gotta buy it where you can get it in bulk.
How long is the class?
The classes are about an hour to an hour and a half.
Because rice can sometimes take 20 or 40 minutes to cook.
Yes. Well, you'll see for this one, we've pre-cooked the rice for them.
Okay.
And then they are going to chop up all the vegetables and saute those together, add the rice, add some soy sauce and seasonings, and then scramble some eggs in there as well.
Do you promote vegetables al dente or does it matter?
You know, for this recipe, I believe it says saute for 5 minutes until well done, but still crisp. So I think it encourages the kids to taste as they cook and make sure that they're getting to the right stage that they like. I like my vegetables slightly crisp. I like to be able to recognize them when I eat them.
Well, some vegetables, they say don't overcook because then you've lost all the nutrients.
Yeah, and I think particularly over steaming or over boiling vegetables, you can just boil all that goodness right out of there.
Do you teach the children, like I've been reading, how if you cut the stalk of the celery, don't throw that away, or the top of the carrots, don't throw that away, boil it down and use this, make your own broth.
Yeah, I do that at home. We haven't gotten there yet. We haven't had a class around broth.
Okay.
And all of our vegetable waste goes out into our worm bin and we compost it. So the kids are really good about sorting everything out so that we can feed the worms.
Okay, so you don't need to make broth right now because you have the compost.
Yeah, I would end up with a lot of broth and not much to do with it.
How long would it take for a compost to be viable as earth to be put in a bin for growing vegetables?
It depends on how fast you're feeding it. So as long as you're feeding your compost, you're always going to have fresh stuff in there that's not degraded to the point of being put in a bed. I think our worm bin, you know, they work faster when it's warmer. So this winter they haven't really done much, but I think anywhere at 6 months, I'll let you know. The kids are adding so much stuff out there that we definitely don't have soil yet.
Did you have to buy worms?
You know, I ordered them from Uncle Jim's Worm Farm.
Okay.
And they came on the hottest day of the summer, and they died.
Oh,
and
no.
So then I got some family worms from my aunt. So those are the ones that we have now.
If I had worms in my compost at home and I just brought a bucket of whatever's in there, would that create more worms?
Yeah, if they're being fed, they're happy. And you know who the expert is on vermicomposting is Jason Miller. So I'm going to
Oh, that's right.
Refer to him.
Yeah, because I remember him bragging about the compost thing he had in his garage.
And he set us up here at Farm to School, too.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Jason.
Yes, thanks, Jason.
Okay, so you will have anywhere from first grade to sixth grade. Do you have, first graders for a whole month before you move on to another grade?
No. So the way I did it this year, and every year is a pilot year, we say, I asked teachers if they wanted to sign up for a course of classes once a week for 6 or 7 weeks. With the first and second graders, we just did 3 weeks. So once a week for 3 weeks, they came out here and did something. With my third through sixth graders now, they're entering in their sixth week of cooking with me, and we have one more week next week, and then we'll be done for a little while, and we'll actually move on to garden classes.
Do they have to qualify by having a certain grade level?
You know, it's up to the teachers to decide how kids earn coming out here. I am open to everybody coming out here, and I think really kids who are struggling academically, this is different, and they really thrive. So kids who struggle with behavior in classroom or academics, we're not asking them to write much stuff down. We're not asking them to do math except where it applies to cooking. And a lot of kids, when they have that direct application to something they're doing, are suddenly able to think about fractions when it comes to measuring a cup of something or a quarter cup.
Because you never know what turns a kid on.
You don't. And, you know, also if they have behavior issues, but they really want to cook, they know that if they're acting out in here, I can't trust them with a tool, I can't trust them in the space, then they're going to have to leave. And I don't know, we've seen a lot of success with some of those kids who come out, and we're a little leery about them at first, but then they just step up and they're leaders at their tables.
Well, that's great. Now, you said that, you know, you knew you wanted to get into something with cooking. Does this satisfy your need for, or are you still yearning to be a chef?
I never yearned to be a chef.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to do food. I was passionate about food systems and local food and farming. And there was a time in my life when I thought I wanted to be a farmer, but the early mornings kind of discouraged that. I think this is my perfect niche. This is my job. Working with kids, teaching them to cook, teaching them to garden is exactly what I'm best at and what I love to do. And I'm just daily grateful that I get to do this and get paid to do it and get to work with so many amazing people.
Okay, well, I've interrupted. I know that you were getting things prepared for when the kids get here, so I'll let you get back to that. If you don't mind, can I talk to Alan?
Yes,
Alan, now you're the new AmeriCorps here.
Yes.
How long have you been here?
Oh, since August, 8 months.
Okay, so you've been here 8 months. Have you been here in the kitchen with Rachel all that time?
Well, I was in the kitchen before the kitchen was ready to be used.
Okay. So did you help get it set up?
Classes, I helped a little bit towards the end. I was here probably 2 or 3 times.
Because you laid the floor in here, you painted, you put up blackboards, etc. Did you help with all of that?
I laid some flooring and sanded some wood.
Now, what are you liking the best about this project?
My favorite thing is kids eating and liking what they made and liking things that they wouldn't normally like, but they like them because they made them, so they take pride in their own creations.
Now, you said you came from Alaska. You were up there for 10 years, so it's not been a horrible transition for you to come to our neck of the woods, right?
Oh, no. It's a very nice climate here.
When you were little, did you cook at home?
Yes. Yeah, I was pretty involved in the kitchen.
So this is a familiar area for you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm usually still in the kitchen at home. I wash dishes here. I go home, wash some more dishes.
Okay. So do the children ever wash the dishes?
The children have been washing the dishes lately. Every now and then they rotate, but students are selected based on good behavior to stay after and wash dishes, and they take turns because it's becoming the new fun thing to do.
Now you're holding something. It's a like an envelope and stuff is dripping out of it. What are you doing exactly?
So I am filtering the syrup from maple sap.
Oh, really?
And out from the sand. So the maple sap has boiled this sand and the syrup, and I'm just getting the sand out.
Where did you get the maple?
From the tree right out the window.
You got it from your own tree out here?
Yeah, well, not my tree.
Well, right, but I mean, you went ahead and put the whatever they put in the bark and, and let it drip into a pot?
Yeah, Mr. Brondy and I, we went out there with the drill and...
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so when you're saying sand, is that really just part of the bark?
So it originally was like this liquid water-like solution with very little flavor, but it's turned into like almost, it looks like raw sugar.
Yes.
Except for it doesn't really taste like sugar. So...
Oh, so we tapped maple trees with Mr. Brondy and with middle school science classes, the environmental science class. And we all learned that you can actually make maple syrup from big leaf maples, which is what we have out here, in the same way that you would from a sugar maple on the East Coast.
Okay.
So we had 20 gallons of maple sap that they collected over the past few weeks, 20 gallons. And Mike Brondy boiled and boiled and boiled it.
Right.
And kids tasted it at different stages of concentration.
Oh.
And so what we're ending up here is like a quart and a half a pint, pretty much, of finished product. And what you're seeing him filter off is the sugar sand, which is actually a precipitate that comes out of the
tree.
At a certain temperature, it just appears in the syrup.
Okay, it's sort of like how you'll get the granules at the bottom of honey sometimes.
Yeah, and so it's actually a calcium kind of deposit sort of thing that separates out of the sugar.
Right. Okay, now, yes, Rockport State Park had a program, and Kevin Zobrist was there talking about the trees and about the maple, and I did not know you had to boil it down to make the syrup. I figured they just tapped it out of the tree and put it on your pancake.
Not exactly. So what I heard from friends who were making maple syrup in this way, that it'll take 40 or 50 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. And we found that 20 gallons of sap made a little more than a quart of finished syrup.
Oh my gosh. So did the children get to taste it along the way to see what the changes were?
Yeah, they did. And it starts out tasting like water, pretty much. Maybe like water that tastes slightly of tree.
Like coconut water.
So now when the children tasted this, Alan, did they put it on something or just take a teaspoon?
They tried them in various ways. We had a mason jar full of sap. We also had like spoons that would just be like, you know, you dip a little spoonful and try it. Mr. Brawny was mostly in charge of the taste testing of the maple. I heard stories about their reactions to it.
Well, he's a great one, too, because he loves children, and I'm sure he makes it very fun for them. But talking about spoons, weren't you part of the program to have the cafeteria at the grammar school start using silver instead of plastic?
Well, yes, we're not using silver flatware, but we are using, you know, whatever the cheap version of that is.
Right.
And, you know, Mia Rusin, who's a third grade teacher here, really spearheaded that movement with her elementary school environmental club a couple of years ago. And Marla Reed, the food service director, was on board. We rolled it out and piloted it at summer camp, which is where we like to test things with a smaller group of children, make sure we can teach them not to throw the forks away.
Right.
And now we're doing that district-wide, which is amazing. When you think about serving about 400 meals a day, 400 lunch a day, and every student takes, say, a fork and a spoon, the sheer amount of plastic cutlery that has been diverted from the landfill is amazing.
And you know, you guys, you and Mia and Marla, you never brag. I would be out there going, guess what I did today? But you guys never brag. The only way we can find out what you guys are doing is if we interview you. So what else are you planning?
What I've heard is that the doers are we're too busy doing it to talk about it. What else are we planning? Well, Marla's staff continues to do amazing things, transforming school lunch from, you know, pre-banked frozen items to scratch made. They make all their own dressings and seasonings for all the foods that they prepare now, which is quite the coup.
Mm-hmm.
So she's doing that. We started the community dinners together with Marla and the school actually the elementary school staff were a driving force in starting the community dinners, which are now once a month. We have one coming up on March 21st.
Right, and it's going to be tacos.
It is. It's a taco night, and I can do a little plug for it. Town Council is doing the meal, and Farm to School is going to do a family game night in conjunction with that. And also, one of my sixth grade classes will be preparing a variety of salsas to taste test on your tacos.
Oh, what a neat idea. Now, I know that when you first started the community dinners, you were trying to have them like the second Wednesday or first Monday of each month, but it never worked out well because they've always got something going at the high school.
Well, now we try to do them in conjunction with another school or community event. So we have a track meet on Wednesday night, and people who are attending the track meet can then come over and get a meal, play some family games with Farm to School. The last one, I believe, was with the daddy-daughter dance in February.
Yes.
And we had one with like the PTO concert, bringing the Reptile Man, the Christmas concert, all of those things. So that way people who, it's a long drive to come into Concrete, have more than one reason to get here. And we get a really good turnout at those events.
Well, that's good. Now, if they want to know when the community dinner is, and if it's not announced on the radio or written in the Concrete Herald, how would they know about it? Is there a website that they can go check or a Facebook page?
Yeah, I think Facebook is probably a really good way. The Concrete Upriver community page, it usually ends up posted on there. But Farm to School also has a Facebook page, Concrete Farm to School. And I always try to post things like that on there as well.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to tell the listening audience before we sign off?
There are tons of opportunities to get involved in Farm to School. We're looking for sponsors for groceries. Our grocery bill is about $100 a week while we're teaching these classes. And
the grant money runs out quick.
Well, grant money is usually designated for being spent on certain things.
Oh.
So we're always looking for those funds that we can spend on food, that we can spend on things as we need them in the classroom.
So besides donating, if they cannot donate produce, then you would like them to donate money.
Yeah, I always am happy to take donations of money. And we're currently working with the Leadership Skagit team to fundraise to finish this space, because I know it looks complete, but there's a lot of little details that still need to be done. And also to build a garden shed so that we have a space that... So one of the amazing things about our kitchen classroom here and how we've designed it is that it really fosters independence for the kids. They know where things are. They can move freely throughout the space without asking an adult's permission to do things. And our garden right now is still kind of lacking that. Our tool shed is, we're sharing with the PTO, and it's just everything's shoved in there. And I really would like to create a space like this outside where the kids can then choose tools and bring them to the garden and just foster that sense of independence and cooperation in the garden.
It sounds like you're sort of ensconced in the community, and it doesn't sound like you're leaving real soon.
I have no immediate plans to leave.
Well, we're the lucky ones, Rachel. You are a boon to the community. You really are. And you're always enthusiastic about it. And like I say, you work on weekends.
Well, yes, you can find me here occasionally. We have Saturday volunteer days every once in a while. Look on our Facebook page. And if people can't give financially, we have so many needs for people to come help weed beds or...
Or water during the hot summer months.
Water during the summer, yeah. Otherwise, that's me, and it makes it hard to take a vacation.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Rachel.